Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Max Wilson back on the show. We're going to get caught up on some tournament stories from this past 2025 walleye tournament season. We do talk ice fishing, given the time of year. Max is guiding this winter at JB Snow Bear Rentals and Guide Service. He's also one of the featured anglers on Tour Level Gold, a very popular YouTube series that follows a select group of anglers on the National Walleye Tour. And there's a few episodes of that wrapping up the 2025 season that are launching right now. One launched earlier this week, and we are anticipating the next one to be very soon. The last one, I know a lot of you look forward to those episodes, and so it's fun to have Max on, chat a little bit about that stuff. So let's get to it here. We've got Max Wilson on the JMO Podcast. For a great Canadian ice fishing adventure, I highly recommend Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge, located in Ontario's Lake of the Woods, 45 minutes north of Baudette, Minnesota. On a remote island, this ice fishing destination is very unique, very big in adventure. It's peaceful, it's quiet, it's Canadian, there's no crowds. All that paired with very excellent accommodations. They have a variety of well-furnished cabin offerings that some host up to 6 guests. This place is a multi-species mecca where big adventure and great accommodations come together, and it's easy to get to. And for all the ladies out there that love catching fish and are interested in great adventures, check out the all-inclusive ladies fishing trip happening at Tamarack Island on February 6th through the 10th. More details on that event you can find online at TamarackIslandWildernessLodge.com or on Facebook. Those links are in the description of this podcast. Making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to SummitFishingEquipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. It seems like you and I, how we get together on these podcasts is so silly. And it's almost like every time we do a podcast and we try to, you know, tell a fun story or get some crazy updates from you, notoriously a week later you're going to do something awesome, and then we should have waited a week. So going all the way back, last time I had you on, you was this last spring, you had won an MWC, done really good in another one, caught a 14 pounder on Oahu. We had all these crazy stories to talk about, and then like a week later you win like the biggest tournament boat field in the walleye world, the 300 boat NTC down on Francis Case, and we never even got a chance to talk about it. So when I ask you for an update here, it's like winter time, and we're going to eventually maybe talk about ice fishing, but in terms of an update from you, I literally need you to go all the way back to the NTC that was in like late June or whenever it was, and get me up to speed on some of these things, which might end up having to be the Cliff Note version. Now, I'm going too long here, but I just think it's hilarious that when I ask you for an update, it's like, we got to go back that far because you're just constantly doing something that's like just wild in the fishing world, and I got to hear about it. So let's go all the way back to that and just touch on some of that stuff, because we haven't even literally talked about it on the podcast at all.
You know, I'm not very superstitious, but I'm a little stitious. So I think you and I need to have more podcasts.
With a big tournament coming up, we got it. Yeah.
Every time we do a podcast, something awesome happens. But no, I mean, it was great, man. I mean, the NTC is, I mean, that's one of the premier tournaments in the walleye industry. And I've come so close so many times. Like I've been right there in the lead going in the final day. I finished third. I finished fourth. You know, I've made the All-American cut now 4 times. And that's one that I wanted to win for a long time. And, you know, it was funny kind of how it happened. I got there. So my background knowledge on it was from, we were there the same time we were there for the NWT in 23. And I had a really, really good time fishing it. And I kind of had an idea on what the bite was going to be like, what we're going to be doing, where I'm going to be. And this was a redemption for me. Because when we were there for the NWT, I dumped an absolute giant on day one, both side, that would have put me right there with Dewey on day one. I was sitting pretty good after day one. So it was one of those, I still have nightmares about it, man. It was 7-8 pounder, both side. just out of range, and it spit the jigging wrap, and the jigging wrap actually hit me right in the chest too. So it adds insult to injury. So coming back, like, that was circle. Like, I love the Missouri River. Missouri River has always been good to me, and I just like how it fishes. So coming into it, I was excited, you know, and I got there early. I wanted to spend a lot of time because I knew it was just going to be me breaking it down. You know, the rest of the guys that I travel with from back home, they weren't coming out until like that Monday or whatever. So I think I got out there Wednesday night. And my first 2 days of practice, like the first day, it was 100-something degrees. It was stupid. It wasn't nice out. And I went right out from where our Airbnb was, right in the bay. It was actually the bay where Dewey won it last time. And I was like, I'm going to go check that point, see if they're in all the stuff they were last time. And last time, like 14 to 15 pounds were big bags. And I had 17 pounds within 25 minutes. Like, it was crazy. And I'm like, okay, these fish clearly have gotten bigger. And I had 17 and 18 pounds my first two days of practice. And everywhere I ran, they were all in the same areas. So I was like, okay, I kind of have an idea. I knew people were going to find it, what we were fishing, but I knew I had a start. Well, my partner, Rob, showed up Saturday. Yeah, Saturday. He showed up Saturday, and we went out, we fished, and I told him, I said, we're going to go to the big fish spot. We're going to go to where I didn't end up going there in the tournament because we got a storm and it was a long run, but I was like, we're going to go check this big fish spot. Well, we rolled in, and within an hour, we had 22 pounds, which for there is, that's like catching 50 pounds on Lake Erie. I mean, that's a huge bag for out there.
Because, I mean, you're talking South Dakota, right? It's overs and unders.
Yeah, so we had big overs and big overs and big unders. And I was like, oh my gosh, cool. And so I started to get this program in my head where I'm like, okay, I'm going to expand. There's these certain, you know, certain situations I was looking for that was holding fish. And I'm like, okay, let's make a run to this other spot. So we ran 14 miles down the lake, and I came off a plane, and all of a sudden my motor was shaking. And I was like, my heart sank because I knew exactly what it was. I was like, oh my God, I just blew my power hedge. And I immediately went into like, okay, how am I going to figure this out? Cause I know I'm not gonna be able to fish this tournament out of my boat. And, one of my best friends, Vaughn, he travels with us for the MWCs, and, he was a co angler with us on the NWT for a few years. Literally one of the greatest human beings I ever met, like one of my closest friends. I called him right away, and I was like, and he lives in Bemidji. And I was like, dude, I was like, I just blew my motor. He goes, I'll have the boat ready. Like, I didn't even have to ask. He's like, I'll have the boat ready for you. Just come get it. And so we got off the water at about 3 o'clock Saturday. We hauled back to Airbnb. I took everything out of my boat. We jumped in the truck. And mind you, this is like a 10-hour drive from Francis Case to my house. Me and Rob start driving. I drive through the night, get to my house at about 2 o'clock. We sleep for a couple hours. I go drop my boat off at my dealer. And then I go from where I live over in Fond du Lac, and I drive 8.5 hours up to Bemidji, where Vaughn lives. I get up to Bemidji and grab his boat, and then drive the 8.5 hours down to Francis Case. And I got back to Francis. We were fishing by Monday morning. So I did the math. We drove 1,800 miles, which was like the equivalent of driving to San Diego and halfway back. we did that in just over 24 hours, just to be able to, cause I donk's like, let's, you know, we don't have to do this. We can just not fish it. We can just skip it. And I told him, I said, we call him Donkey, is Rob's nickname. And I said, Donk, and said, for lack of better words, I said, we're winning this damn tournament. I was like, we're on a bite to win this. I'm not letting anything be like that. Tournament was like a perfect synopsis of my last few years. Like everything going against me, like I could have quit. I should have probably quit. And I just, my stubbornness was like, absolutely not. We're not doing this. And we get to the tournament. We go out first day, you know, fish a good day. I kept two middle of the road overs. I had some good unders, and we were sitting like ninth or 10th after day one. The top 25 gets to fish day three, and it's called the All American Cut. So they give you All American rings if you make the top 25. And so we were, you know, first goal is fish for the cut, and then, you know, go for the win from there. Well, day two, I catch what did I get? I caught a big, I want to say I caught a big one. And then, yeah, I caught like a 6-pounder. And I was like, okay, that's huge. And then I catch like a 3.5-pounder and I panicked and I kept it because I was like, I got to average at least 4 pounds on my overs. And I'm like doing the math. I'm like, you know, that averages out to like 4.75 pounds on overs. Like that's still, you know, good, blah, 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 blah. I was like playing it safe, right? Well, then I pitched into a tree. There was a big one and a little one. And I was trying to get that smaller one out of the tree because I was done on overs. Well, of course, the big one bit and it was a 7.5-pounder that I had to throw back. And then I casted at another tree where I did not see a big fish. All I saw was a little one. Well, another 7-pounder just magically appeared and smoked my bait. So then I catch 2 back-to-back 7-pounders that I had to throw back with a 3.5-pounder in my box. And then a little later on, while I was fishing next to another competitor, and I saw a big one, and he was right behind me, and they were like right behind me in the standings. And so I played a little defense, and I caught that one just to kind of clear it out of the area. You know,
I get it.
And that was a 6-pounder. So I ended up having 4 over 6 pounds that day, and I was only able to keep one of them. So coming into the final day, we were in second, and you'll never guess who was leading. It was, you know, our Lord and Savior Dewey. Big surprise. He's leading a Missouri River tournament.
Yeah.
And what was crazy after day two, I'm coming in and all of a sudden a boat like is kind of halfway throttling in front of me. And then he stops and like cuts us off and starts waving. And I realized it was Dewey because they were in his partner's boat and they were having motor issues. So he asked if I could give him a ride in. And I was like, yeah, you know, yeah, okay, sure. And we give him a ride in and he's beating us now. He's leading, we're in second, and I was the one that brought him in. And I told him, I said, well, this just means good karma for tomorrow because I'm going to need all the luck I can to take you down.
Yep.
And we go out, and I told Rob, I was like, we're going for the win. Like, we got our rings. Like, we're not playing it safe. Like, I'm not screwing around. And I get back to the spot, and the only other boat back by me was Bo Schilling, who – That's not someone you want back by you because that kid's such a freaking hammer.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, he is an absolute stud. And he was working the back part and I was working like the more front part of the area. And I seen this giant mark and it was one of those 6-7 pound style marks. And I was like, I need, that's $100,000 fish. I'm pitching at it. And I got it to eat 3 times, but it missed my bait all 3 times. And I chased this fish for an hour and a half, and I caught 2 other unders along the way. Like, I would set the hook on the under, crank it in, but I'd keep the trolling motor on that big one not to lose it. So we got 2 of our unders while chasing this big one, and it started to like sink down. And the only I couldn't get the jig and crawler to go very well. I could get a couple to eat it, and the only ones that would eat it were the big ones. And he bit the jig wrap a couple times, and I flipped the he started like sink down to the bottom, and I flipped the jig and crawler to him as like a last ditch effort. I'm like, oh, whatever, one last cast at him. And that thing just turned and just the most like aggressive, like inhale, smoke it, rip the rod out of your hand type of bite. And it caught me so off guard, and I set the hook and I just start screeching. I'm like, it's her, it's her, it's her. And I had some friends of mine that are, they actually were the camera boat for me for Francis Case when I was there for the NWT. Well, they came out to watch me on the water. And so they were like, they were like the spectators or whatever.
Sure.
And so they were, they were probably about 30, 40 yards off my right, dead even with me. So they got to see that. And it was just cool having a like crowd. And I'm pretty sure the entire like area heard me when I caught that fish. And so I box it. And it was like 6.5-pounder, huge fish. And I'm fishing, and I catch a 3.5-pounder, or like a 3.75, and I'm sitting there holding it like, okay, this is now or never, you know. And every time I've ever tried to gamble in a tournament, I lose. Like, it never, like, you always see Dewey like, oh, I threw back 7 9-pounders to catch a 10. That never happens to me. And so I'm like, oh God, like, this is hard. And I said, like, and my friends have a video of it because they, you know, they were filming it. They filmed the whole catch, and they filmed me sitting there, and me and Donk are sitting. I'm sitting on the side box. He's on the live well, and we're looking at each other, and he's like, dude, this is up to you. Like, this is your choice. And I'm looking at him like, screw it, we're going for it. And I threw it, And my buddy's like, oh, he's going for it. I like it. And then I immediately like regretted my decision because the bite got tougher. Then finally I got a 5 pounder to bite. That's when I was like, oh my God, this is what we needed. And we ended up, I want to say it was like noon, there's area, and we needed one more fish to like seal it. And mind you, it's 110 degrees out and I am dehydrated and I'm on the verge of heat stroke. And I catch a like 2.8 pound under. I fainted in the boat after, like shortly after I caught that fish. And if it wasn't for Donk, like I was going in the water, like because I like leaned over and he's like, are you good? And I just go, yeah. And then all of a sudden I just fell and he grabbed me as I was going over the side of the boat. And he goes, yeah, we're going in now. Like we have what we need. Like we're going to get you into some shade and get you some water. And, came in and thankfully we did. We came in early and it just ended up working out, but it was cool. Cause that was that, I have certain goals for my career of like, you know, I want to win on every series I fish. You have all these lifetime goals and, you know, winning an NTC was at the top of that list. And, you know, NTC and AOI were the two last things I have left on my list. And to finally check that one off was a really big moment. And to knock off Dewey on the Missouri River, like, I feel like that should be like extra points. But no, that was cool. And then, you know, the rest of the season, it didn't go the way. That was kind of like beginning of the end for the season for me. Like, I won one more tournament back home, like a week after with Rob on Winnebago. And then, man, I just sucked after that. Like, I just didn't fish very good on the NWT. NWCs were, you know, I had a lot of equipment issues last year, pure bad luck, but, you know, we ended up holding on to win Team of the Year for MWC again. So that was the third time got that done. So that was cool. I mean, that was a good cap to the year, but, you know, it just wasn't that impressive until we got to fall, and then my fall just got absolutely insane again.
That NTC is so fascinating to me. Like, the more and more I've learned about it, it's like, you know, a 300 boat field is, that's pretty insane. That whole thing is just so fascinating to me. So yeah, I thinking back on that, I just remember that being so funny. But we had like, I had just aired your, you know, our conversation about like the MWC and just all the good spring fishing that you had up until that point. There were so many good stories to be told, and literally like, you know, 2 days later is when you're having all that boat trouble pre-fishing and it's like, who knows what's going on. And then you win the thing. And it was like, that is so, yeah, dude, that was rich, man. I was so pumped for you. But, but then like, this is like fast forwarding a whole bunch to almost like something a little bit more recently, but, you're kind of my guy. You're my go-to guy to talk to about, you know, the international stuff. Once again, dude, just like super interesting when you were overseas and fishing the Xander and doing all that deal. That looked like another like super challenging year for that. I kind of want to jump into a little bit of that and just kind of hear how that went. And again, I'm always just fascinated by the things that you learn, the things that you see when you're over there that are, you know, just like big takeaways from that sort of stuff, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was a wild adventure just even getting there. I mean, I flew into, so as soon as my tournament season finished, I finished up on Cass Lake. I drove through the night home. And when I got home, I basically caught a flight the very next day to Dublin and landed in Dublin. And my partner, Mark, the guy I fished the NWCs with, he lives, you know, north of Dublin, about 2 hours or so. And I stayed with him for about a week, getting ready to go on this trip and kind of getting everything together, and did some fishing around there, you know, off the shore, did some shore banging, but catching pike. But we drove all the way from Northern Ireland to Estonia, towing a boat, which that's equivalent of, it was 3,400 miles. So that's equivalent of driving from like New York City all the way to LA. And it was 11 countries, took us a day and a half to do. And it was wild. I mean, we stopped at all these awesome bait shops along the way. I bought so much tackle along the way. But it was tough because we were passing all these like world class fisheries that, you know, you read about or you see on TV shows. Like we went through the Netherlands, you know, where they're catching 5-6 pound perch, you know, and we're going through the main river in Germany where they're catching giant zander and giant pike and, you know, all this. So it was tough on that end. But the thing was, on this lake we were going to, they have some of the biggest zander in the world in this lake, but the zander fishing was horrible while we were there, because they had the first major cold front of the year came in and completely shut the fish down. So for the entire tournament, there was, I want to say it's 7 zander caught in the entire tournament.
Oh, wow.
And only 2 countries caught zander. And one of them was the Estonian team. I never caught a zander in Estonia the entire 3 weeks I was there. We had a day where we went down to Latvia, down to Riga, where we were in 2023, where we competed. And I knew that water really well, and I knew where those fish were. So Mark and I, on one of our off days, went down there just for fun and whacked a bunch of zander and, you know, had a blast. But it was, I mean, dude, it was crazy because, like, it turned into a pike competition. You know, you're fishing for pike and perch, but the minimum size length for, like, a scoreable pike is 50 centimeters, which is 19 inches, right? And to get one scoreable pike, you'd have to go through anywhere from 5 to 10 fish before you caught one over 50 centimeters. So we're catching like 14 to 16 inch pike, right? Like it is not what you wanted to drive 3,500 miles for, but it was one of those things where I had a blast doing it because it was like, okay, like we're flipping Kytex into like picture like Northern Minnesota rice paddies, like the, you know, the big rice stalks that come up.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Leech Lake style backwater stuff.
Yep. Yep. So we were fishing like that's what the shoreline was. And we were bass fishing. We're pitching shoreline. We're flipping, you know, we're flipping Kytex into these pockets and swimming it back and just getting, I mean, you're catching a lot of fish and it was a blast. Day one was a struggle for us for the competition. I caught, what did I catch? I caught like 40 perch and I caught 10 pike, but none of the pike were scoreable and only 2 of the perch were scoreable.
Dang, dude.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like I had so many 48, 49 centimeter pike, and the other boat, Nick and Ryan, they had a couple legal pike, just pike fishing. I was just fishing for like perch, whatever, you know, and you catch pike within the perch. And so I made a game plan switch on day 2. And it was a grind. Oh my gosh, was it a grind? And Nick and Ryan were catching fish, and I'm like picking off a few here or there, but no scoreables. And finally, I just went into, you know, grind scramble mode and started fishing new water. And I came upon a stretch of good ones. And in the last hour, I put 4 pike and 2 perch on the card, which is huge for your score. You know what I mean? It bumped us way up. So it kind of gave me an idea. And then, all the while, the weather is not great, you know, and it's a big, long lake you got to go to get, you know, to get to the fishing grounds. And so you're, you know, you're beating the crap out of yourself. And it takes everything, you know, to figure it out. And these European fish, man, are so different than U.S. fish. And, you know, we were able to parlay that on the last day into a, you know, we had a really good day. And I ended up catching. And so this is how sad it was for size. I caught the fourth biggest fish of the competition, and it was a 74 centimeter pike. That's like 25, 26 inches or something like that. Like it's nothing, you know? And that was the biggest fish was like a 82 centimeter, which is like, I don't know, like 30 inch pike or something like that. So it, you know, it was just a lot of little fish, grindy, but it makes you such a better fisherman fishing over there because those fish are so finesse oriented and everything has to be perfect. Like, you have to present that bait perfectly to the fish. Like there's no like get lucky, drop it on them. And like where a walleye will turn around and come smoke it. Like you have to present it so perfectly to these fish, you know, and there's so many different, you know, they use a lot of US baits, a lot of bass baits, a lot of, you know, sure. Drop shotting, stuff like that, football jigs, swing heads, you know, stuff like that. Kytex is huge over there, jerk baits, you know? So I love it. Like it's a grimy grind, and you know, it was a long journey to do that. There, you know, to go catch those type of fish. But every time I fish one of those competitions, I leave a better fisherman. I mean, hands down, you know. And I seen the big Xander. I mean, dude, they have Xander up to 30 pounds in that body of water. And you seen them. Like the average size fish was like 10 pounds in there. And you'd see them on LiveScope. They wanted nothing to do with eating. Like they were just so fickle. Hey, oh my gosh, will it drive you nuts? Like, you know, it's the most beautiful LiveScope walleye marks you've ever seen. And I always joke that Xander have no business looking as much like a walleye as they do, because they do not act like a walleye one bit.
For a great Canadian ice fishing adventure, I highly recommend Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge, located in Ontario's Lake of the Woods, 45 minutes north of Baudette, Minnesota, on a remote island. This ice fishing destination is very unique, very big in adventure. It's peaceful, it's quiet, it's Canadian, there's no crowds. All that paired with very excellent accommodations. They have a variety of well-furnished cabin offerings that some host up to 6 guests. This place is a multi-species mecca where big adventure and great accommodations come together, and it's easy to get to. And for all the ladies out there that love catching fish and are interested in great adventures, check out the all-inclusive ladies fishing trip happening at Tamarack Island on February 6th through the 10th. More details on that event you can find online at TamarackIslandWildernessLodge.com or on Facebook. Those links are in the description of this podcast. Making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to SummitFishingEquipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount.
As far as like environmental, like is it like fishing pressure that makes them so stingy, or are they just like a really, really old sort of smart fish that it's hard to trick them? One of the things, you know, for context, you know, you've educated me before, is like when you're fishing overseas in these competitions, there's like no live bait. So like there's no like power corking with leeches or whatever, you know, like things that we would do on, say, like a really stingy finesse bite. So it's like some of that stuff obviously is a factor like competitively, but I'm just sort of curious about that stuff. Like if you talk about the, you know, when you guys were going through this seasonable like cold front that was like a shocker, is some of that philosophy sort of similar over there on those, for those fish on those bodies of water? Like,
oh, for sure. I mean, it's even more prevalent with Xander too, like than walleye. Like the Estonian, you know, because I'm good buddies with the Estonian team captain, and you know, I kept asking him, I said, is it gonna be a good bite? And like all September he's like, Max, it's insane right now. He goes, we're doing 30 to 40 Xander a day in practice, and you know, it's crazy. But then we get there, and that was like when the first cold front set in. It was windy and cold, and water temps dropped, you know, 7-8 degrees, and you know, they straight up said, you know, that's the biggest thing, you know, everyone says over there about Xander. Like when the Xander don't want to eat, they don't want to eat. There's no like where, you know, walleye, you know, you hang a jig and crawler in a walleye's face, more times than not, he's going to eat. You know what I mean? Eventually, even when they're fickle, finicky. Xander, dude, man, they're so bite window oriented. They're so like, everything's got to be perfect. You can't, you do one step wrong, they don't eat. Like you got to catch, sometimes you got to cast at that fish 20 times. And you know, if he starts to, it's funny, like if they sit there and you keep cast at him and you know, maybe eventually they'll bite. But when you spook a Xander, they just kind of like slowly sink down to the bottom. Like they just go, like they tilt downwards and they just start slowly going downhill. Like, and they just morph into the bottom. And when that happens, you're like, okay, well, move on to the next fish, you know. But they're, oh my, I have such a love hate with them, because all of a sudden when one decides to eat, I mean, it throttles the rod out of your hand. I mean, it's, there's no bite like a Xander bite. Like yeah, it's yeah. 10 times harder than any walleye. Like every Xander I've ever caught, that bait is in the absolute like back of their throat. Like it's gone. There's no like, There's no like lip hook in a Xander. It's either in the back of their throat or they're not eating whatsoever. So I mean, they're fun to fish for. I mean, don't get me wrong, like when you catch them, but when I'm over there, I prefer like the perch and the pike. Like it's, more consistent. The pike or pike. You know what I mean? Like
Sure.
even your European pike, they're aggressive. You put a big bait past their face, they're gonna chase and smoke it. And the perch over there are kind of like finicky small walleyes. I mean, it's just they're very similar in that sense,
To find the winning water over there, like, do you just gotta find, like the location, like we think about like reservoir fish and migrating fish, like where you find like core populations of fish. I'm curious, like, what you experienced over there for that time of year, the kind of patterns that you were looking for. Were like a lot of the tournament boats that were doing better, right? Like it wasn't like nobody was lights out, but like if, was it a deal where they just kind of knew what stretch of water to be in, or was like how diverse are like the patterns and the type of water that you're looking for?
Yeah, so the number one most important thing when you're fishing these events is determining what you're gonna fish for, because like a lot of these tournaments, or not a lot, all the tournaments over there, over here we had the luxury of we're just fishing for walleye, right? Like, so I can focus on spots and programs, all that, but in these international competitions, it's Xander, pike, and perch. So that's three completely different species you're targeting, first of all. And then, so you have to determine, okay, what do I want to fish for, right? Like perch is a lot of times structure based, because if you're live scoping like the big schools and stuff like that, there's usually those are the small ones, not non-legal. And to be competitive on perch, you have to be putting, historic the way the scoring works. So like Estonia this year, first place was Romania, and they won on pike, right? Estonia took second, and they took second on Xander. Xander and like a couple pike thrown in here or there, but mainly Xander. And then third place was Lithuania, and they were fishing all perch. So it's tough to try and determine what you're doing. Romania was fishing, how do I explain it? It's like shallow, weedy bays, right? And they weren't fit. They didn't have anything like secret or special areas. Like all the other boats were right in on Romania. And the other part is these guys are cutthroat. Like the stuff the guys do over there in the tournaments would get you shot in tournaments here. Like they'll, like they will. Like when, because Lithuania was leading the first 2 days on perch, they were just annihilating giant perch. There was boats, like other countries were waiting for Lithuania to come out of takeoff, and then they'd follow
Oh my.
them. And Lithuania, I think it was day two, went and fished a random spot for the first 2 hours, and it was foggy. And they were Ukraine was one of the countries. That was doing it, and they had like it was like three or four boats were following them and waiting. Like every time they'd move a spot, those three boats would follow them because they were trying to find their perch spot. And luckily, they were able. It was foggy, so they were able to lose them in the fog and then get to their perch spot and just start meleeing the perch. And then when Romania started distancing themselves on pike, everyone else was there, and they were finding out. Like they were looking in their boat at what they were throwing, and then pictures were getting sent around to everyone. Oh, this is what Romania is throwing. It was just a simple silver spoon. It wasn't anything incredibly different, but they just, it's like anything. You get on the right stretch, shallow, weedy bays for pike for numbers is always good. Ireland, it was kind of like deeper holes, edges of holes, like points and stuff like that were holding fish. They'd set up a lot like walleyes, especially in Ireland. So each year has been different, and each place fish is so vastly different. Like Latvia, when we were there in 23, we were fishing like turning basins for where ships will park, because we're fishing a river, or like a river system that came off the sea. So you're fishing like 40-foot like harbors where like freight, like ocean liners are parked, and I'm pitching underneath the SS big boat or whatever, and so you're doing something like that. Or then the year before that, we were in the Czech Republic, and we were fishing a reservoir that was the reservoir was half a mile wide by 20 miles long. So it was a super tight, narrow one. And there was like creek arms that shot off of that. And we were fishing like main lake flats, like bends on the river where the fish were set up in deep water, you know, suspended. And then our B spot was up in a creek arm where the Xander were resting up in the creek arm. So like everywhere you go, that's where we struggle as a country, because, you know, we only get 2 days of practice like sanctioned. So that's why the last 2 years I started going out 2-3 weeks ahead of time, ahead of the rest of the team, to try and get, you know, time on the water to try and sort through the mess, you know what I mean? And figure out like, okay, what is this body of water even like, you know, where do these fish? Cause the hardest part is finding them, but then also getting them to eat. So you have to, you know, to try and do all that with three different species and two practice days, it's almost impossible, you know? So that's where you try and go out there and just try everything, you know, anything that looks fishy, you know, like perch are, you know, they like rocks, they like boat docks, stuff like that. Any sort of structure the perch will be hanging on. And then generally, you know, you'll have pike outside of that, or if there's bait, the pike will be just outside the bait, you know. So it's pretty straightforward. It's not the hardest thing in the world. It's just, you know, being able to sort through all that new water, you know, and figure out what's my best bet? Do I perch fish? Do I pike fish? Do I Xander fish, you know? And to be honest with you, I don't ever see a situation where Xander will be the main player, just for how they are as a species. They're very bite window oriented. Like my best day of Xander fishing ever, I had 8, you know, and that's not a great day for a world competition when, you know, you get boats that are going out catching 15, 16 pike a day, you know? So
yeah,
to be competitive, you have to try and put up these big numbers. So it turns into, you know, if you can catch a million perch, then that, you know, that's the deal. Or it's a pike competition. Trying to bring tackle too. Like that's the hardest part. Like trying to fly with enough tackle. So, I mean, you know how tournament anglers are. You got to have three of everything. Try and go to a world championship, not really knowing what's going to work. So trying to bring a little bit of everything, you know, and just trying to get all the tackle there. That's like my fiance, you know, she's from Scotland. And luckily I'm keeping all my European tackle just over there. So then I just end up driving to the events, you know, so I can bring everything. But, you know, it used to be trying to fly with this stuff was a logistical nightmare, you know?
Yeah, man. Like rods and stuff, like you bring a rod locker of whatever, like 6-8 rods, but you're used to fishing at home with a rod locker that's, you know, basically unlimited of, and everything's like pre-rigged. You know,
it hurts my soul not having my boat over there, because like you'll see these countries come in and try and flex on you with like an 18-foot aluminum boat, and you're like, and you know, they're nice boats for over there, you know.
Sure.
But like I'm sitting there like, and you know, like some of them are cool, you know, most of the guys are cool, but sometimes they'll try and like talk down to you like with the boat you have or whatever, and I'm just sitting there like, dude, let's run one of these events in the States, like. Come see what real fish, you know, what our fishing's like, you know,
they'd probably like love it.
Oh, they're chomping at the bit to get here. And yeah. We're working on having one out here in the next couple of years. But it's funny, cause like I'll show them my boat, you know, and over there, like a 200 horsepower motor is like, holy cow, you know?
Yeah.
And they'll ask like, what size motor do you guys have, you know, in the States? So I'm like, well, most of us are like 400 to 4.25. And they're like, their jaws just hit the floor, you know, like, oh my God, you know?
Yeah. That's cool experience, man. I just like the conversations that I have, like with you, like talking about how they finesse fish and stuff over there. I mean, understanding the format is, you know, competitively is like such a massive thing for you guys over there, but just as like a consumer, like listening to you talk about, you know, the finesse fishing, tactics over there, you know, which is not live bait. Like you guys don't, you know, can you pre-fish with live bait or anything? Like, is that even a thing over there? Like they sell minnows of any kind, or can you try, like, is that like a thing that anybody, like recreational fishermen even mess with?
So they don't do live bait. They do what's called dead baiting.
Okay.
And that's huge for in the pike world.
Okay.
And in the Xander world too, they'll do it dead baiting. Like, they'll leave like something sit on bottom, or like they'll fish under like bobbers and stuff like that. And it's kind of similar to like how we catfish, you know, like you set out your, okay, you soak your dead rods and stuff like that. But it's funny because like the lure fishermen, it's kind of like the bass and walleye, you know what I mean? Like taboo. There's that slight competition, you know? So like the dead baiters and lure fishermen, like lure guys are like, oh, I would never use live bait or dead bait. That's cheating. Like they're very like, you think that like the anti live scopers about over here, you should see the anti live baiters over there. It's even worse. Like it's funny to watch, but I've caught fish like doing, like I actually caught my PB pike last year, dead baiting, but doing it how I do it, you know what I mean? Where I was sharpshooting with a slip bobber and like the pack I bought from the bait shop had a dead perch in it. So I rigged up the perch on I brought some smelt rigs over and I rigged up the smelt rigs under a bobber. I flipped that out on a fish and I dropped it right on his nose and I was sitting there jigging it in his face and just twitching it and kind of started taking it away from him. And it was a 25 pounder, just absolutely kicked, turned and crushed the bait. And it blew Mark's mind. He's like, holy cow. Like, cause we casted at that fish 10 times with lures and it just didn't activate. And then you hang something like that in their face. And yeah, it's game over. Like I guarantee like a jig and a crawler would work on a Xander. Like I got him to chase. I brought some of those Berkeley gulp crawlers.
Oh, sure.
Over. And I got really good reactions on those. It just, I never got one to eat.
Sure.
But I guarantee if you just hung it there, because like they don't even allow in tournaments, they don't even allow vertical jigging, because that's how like to get Xander to eat. That's like the most effective way. So we're not even allowed to vertical fish.
Yeah, like if you watch it on YouTube, that's what those guys are doing.
Yeah, it's called pelagic sharpshooting. And it was funny because like he's actually a really good buddy of mine now. But when we were in Ireland, I got into it with the at one of the captain's meetings, I got into it with the Latvian team captain because there was a bunch of like bickering going on about Lithuania was, they ended up winning. And the reason why they curb stomped everyone was because they were fishing faster than everyone else. They would push with the main motor, tell you saw a fish, put it in neutral, cast the fish, catch the fish, right? And they were just lapping the field and everyone was getting mad. They're like, you can't your power, blah, blah, blah. And it stated in the rules that you can make small moves. It just, the motor has to be in neutral when you cast the fish. And so I'm defending Lithuania because, you know, people complaining about someone being successful that hits close to home. And I'm defending them. And the Latvian guy goes, they should turn off the motor when they're fishing. The motor triggers fish to eat. And I'm sitting there and I go, what? And I'm like, absolutely. I said, if anything, it spooks the fish. What are you talking about? And he goes, you stupid American, you know nothing about pelagic sharpshooting. And at this point, I'm like, because pelagic sharpshooting is what I make my living doing. It's just sharpshooting out suspended basin fish. That's all it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And I laugh. I go, are you sure about that? And he goes, us Europeans would kick your butt. That's not the exact word to use, but you get the gist.
Yeah.
In your silly little walleye competitions. And I took my wallet out of my pocket and I slammed it on the table. I said, I got 10 grand and you couldn't even hold my guys' jock straps. And it turned into this like ultimate like argument over, you know, who's the better live scoper and all that. Which it was just funny. It was just competitors, you know, button heads at the time, but it was so funny because they're like, they don't think the Americans do that stuff, you know? And I'm like, I got an entire team full of guys where that's all we do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that like, they don't even allow it in tournaments because it's just so effective. You know, it's, you sit over a Xander and you present because they use really big baits, like 7, 8 to 10 inch flukes. And you present that over a fish and eventually they'll eat if if you're doing it right. It's just so damn effective, which I think silly. I think you should allow it, but it's one of those things where it is what it is, but yeah, it's definitely a whole different world of fishing over there for sure.
Yeah. It's like, you're not, other than I suppose like a giant pike, you know, the multi-day tournament where people are racking up smaller fish. Like it's so tough. Like, you know, I imagine it'd be like, it's tough to get behind where like you can be in a walleye tournament or a bass tournament or whatever. And there's tons of examples where you're never more than like one like unicorn giant bite away from like just, you know, jump in like 30 spots in the leaderboard or whatever, right? Like there's a ton of reason to fish hard, like all the way to the end, because like one bite can make a massive difference. I suppose that's not untrue there, but it's almost like a little bit farther fetch in a circumstance where the bite is impossible or tough. But it would be cool if you're on one of those bodies of water that has like 20 plus pound Xander, like, to, you know, where the rules aren't written up to make it almost impossible to actually catch one.
Yeah.
It's like if there's a way to make it to where, I mean, I the whole world stage would rather see one of those caught in competition, you know. So anyways, whatever. I have no opinion, but I do find this stuff like super, super curious. But it is kind of what you're up against. You know, the format and those rules is like a huge, huge part of that conversation. But just I love the conversation about like making those decisions on what you're going to fish for and the type of patterns that you're looking for and like how you're trying to maximize your opportunities over there is definitely like a huge deal. And I can imagine just that level of competition and having those opportunities is just a cool thing that you get to, you know, you and Ryan Buddy, Nick Schertz, they're over there with you.
Yep. And then Hoyer did it for a few years, but he just got too busy this last year, you know, him being Mr. Worldwide. So he didn't fish this last year. He fished 3 years, and then I fished with my buddy Jeremy. He's our team president, so he filled in this year and fished with us. So I mean, it's a great group of guys. I mean, you know, it's everyone has different strengths, you know. It's a melting pot, you know, different opinions. We butt heads from time to time.
Well, you're competitive. I mean, you get competitive guys in a room, and you're trying to do good and be competitive, and everybody, yeah, dude, like, it's all good stuff.
You get someone like, you know, Nick Schertz, in my opinion, is one of the best fishermen I've ever met. Like, that guy, you could take him to a sewage pond and he'd catch a 10-pounder out of it, you know. And, you know, he's fished all over the world between ice fishing and open water. And,
yeah,
you know, you get Ryan, you know, with Ryan, he's a Delta pilot. So, I mean, he has a house down in the Bahamas. So, you know, he fishes Amsterdam, Korea, Africa. Like, when he's on a layover or whatever, because he's a long haul pilot. So when he's on these layovers or whatever, he goes and fishes. So like he's got like a 17-pound Xander, he's got big pike, you know, big perch, you know. So these guys, you know what they're doing and have a lot of mindset, and where every time we fish one of these, the team gets better and better and better. And that's why you don't see us bringing, you know, a bunch of new guys in every year, because, you know, it wouldn't do you any good bringing someone brand new in, because then you have to restart the process of learning how to fish for a Xander, you know.
Yeah, it's a very unique piece. It's a very unique experience and skills to have, like, to be. Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
Like it took Hoyer 2 years to catch a Xander. You know, the entire first year when we were in the check, he never got one, and I barely caught any. And it was, you know, the only way I caught him was I was not live scoping. I was in the back of the boat just blind fishing real slowly, and I'd catch him, you know. And here, you know, he spent all week throwing a number 9 jigging wrap at him and never got one to eat, you know. So he tried fishing him like a walleye, and we just never got bit. And then once we came back to Latvia, like, we were watching fish get caught around us, but then when we went to Latvia, you know, we kind of had that, okay, this is what we were doing wrong, this is what we need to do differently. And then, you know, it took us a day or two to get the walleye habits out. And then all of a sudden, come game day, once we got dialed into the species, all of a sudden John was, you know, bam, 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 bam. You know, you learn from your mistakes, you know. So it's just putting time in and learning it and learning a new species, you know, which is exciting, because you get to a point with walleyes where I by no means know everything about walleyes, but I feel like I know the species pretty well. So it's fun to start that process over from scratch again and kind of relearn a new species.
Yeah, dude, that stuff is all just fascinating, man. Like, just the learning and the different experiences, that's what we're all after. Like, for me, probably the most exotic thing I can do, or just like from a growth standpoint, like, just fishing like a different species, and sometimes it just, you know, just any of those things where you're just out of your comfort zone or just out of your norm helps you get out of a rut, this or that, like, on some level, right? But going international fishing, you know, on the other side of the world and doing that stuff is just like an overload of that. And yeah, that stuff is like super, super cool. Well, let's before we get, you know, we're kind of going deep on that stuff, but this time of year, ice fishing, you and I haven't had a ton of ice fishing conversations, if any at all, but keeping track of you, man, like give me a little bit of an ice fishing update.
Because yeah, I mean, I'm just as surprised as you are, like that I've always been, I don't want to say anti-ice fishing, but I've never been a big, huge fan of it. Like I, you know, if I can go do stuff like when we went up to Winnipeg, you know, like that's the stuff I like, right? Like, or going to Devils and fishing with Jay and stuff like that. Like, that's fun, but like where I live, ice fishing sucks. Like, it's just not great, you know? And so I usually spend most of my winters, you know, getting stuff ready, you know, getting healthy again, getting my stuff in order, ready for the season, right? Traveling to shows, seminars, all that. Well, I went out, the kids that I travel with for the MWCs, they live in Watertown, South Dakota, and they guide for an outfitter called JB Snowbears and Rentals. And they had a cancellation last week, and my buddy was like, hey man, like if you're not doing anything this weekend, you should come out. Like Junior, the owner, really wants to meet you. He'd love for you to come out, do some fishing, whatever. He goes, the bite's pretty good right now. I was like, you know what? I've never fished out of a snow bear. I was like, you know, the kid's good. You know, wife and kid are good. Like, everyone's set. I'm like, okay, let me see if I can swing it, you know? So I got the okay to leave. And I called a buddy of mine, and he brought his stepson and his girlfriend. And that was my first snow bear experience. And holy cow, man, that is the only way to ice.
Yeah, they're getting popular nowadays.
Oh, my gosh. They guide on like Bay Area, those lakes. And he's got like six beautiful snow bears. They're all, you know, snow bears, very well kept, very good condition. And he's got multiple guides in there. They're just wrecking fish every day. The walleye fishing was incredible every morning. Like they were suicidal every morning. Numbers, you had big fish mixed in. Like it was just crazy. And then, we go to another lake and just absolutely craziest bluegill fishing I've ever experienced in my life. We were getting like a 4-man limit in like an hour, 8 to 10 inch bluegills. And we're throwing the giant ones back, and we're throwing like the 8 inchers back, and we're still getting that in an hour. I mean, it was crazy. And then perch fishing was great, you know, so it was unbelievable. And I told him, I said, hey, if you ever need a guide, like, you know, I'm free in the winters. And he's like, can you start this week? Like, can you start tomorrow, pretty much? And I laughed. He's like, no, I'm serious. He goes, I'll hire you right now if you're serious. And I was like, well, so it's got to make sense, you know. And you know, he made it make sense, and it was an opportunity that I just couldn't pass up. And to be honest, you know, it's for me, it's also surrounding myself with good people. Like Junior's such a good, genuine person. And he takes such good care of his guys. Like my buddies that work for him, he takes such good care of them. It's like a family, you know. It's not like you're working for a boss and he's bossing around. Like it's a family there, you know. And that's stuff like that is like when I can really get behind it. You know, I love guiding. I've always have, you know, I've got salmon, whitetail, walleyes. I just like connecting with people. And, you know, it was one of those things where I was like, you know what, let's do this, especially out of a snow bear. Cause like the only time I was outside in 2 days or 3 days was when I would have to walk from the truck to the snow bear. And then I was sitting there in a sweatshirt, base layer, and like sweatpants. And that's what you fished in for 3 days straight. You know what I mean? Like, it's the most comfort, luxury style of fishing. You know, it's so cool. And you got like flat screen TVs on the, you know, all throughout the bear, so you can watch live scope and stuff like that. Like it's so cool. You know, it's such a cool way to fish. You know, it's something that I could get excited about, you know. So I'll be doing that part-time for the rest of the winter. And then next winter, I'll be full-time starting in December doing that. So never thought I'd say that I was going to become an ice guy. That was like the last, that was not on the bingo card, but here we are.
JB Snow Bear Rentals and Guide Service in Watertown, South Dakota.
Yep.
Dang, dude, that's wild. Dude, that's man. As always, whenever we get updates from Max It's always there's always some juice, man, and that's super cool. That obviously, anytime that we get a chance to hear that you're fishing is always, you know, fun and entertaining for us. But I just like hearing that you got fun stuff happening, and yeah, dude, and you're a family man now, and that's awesome.
My son was born back in October, and it's just absolutely wild. Like it's ever happened to me, like bar none. Like it's so cool having a mini version of myself, you know, and terrifying at the same side, like absolutely terrifying. A mini me is like, ugh, I don't know if the world's ready for that, but no, it's great, dude. It's been the best after such a crappy few years for me, and to be as where I was for as long as I was, you know, and not thinking that I had much of a future, you know, and to see it turn into what it is now is just, everything that happens on the water now, just it's not as important. You know what I mean? Like what's important is what's going on at home, you know, and it's a very good, it's a very welcome change. I mean, it's awesome, man. I'm absolutely, absolutely blessed.
Yeah, dude. Seeing you having fun being a dad is like, that's it, man. That's all, man, you're not a stranger to having changes here and there, so you're gonna dominate this season of your life, dude. And I don't really have a whole lot else for you. I you know, one thing I was gonna bring up was you know, we're looking to have this conversation, and I thought, you know, not knowing the air schedule of tour level gold, like not knowing when that was gonna come out, I was like kind of hoping that we could have a conversation in and around that, because you know, obviously there'll be some buzz in the walleye world when that comes out. And supposedly tonight or sometime very, very soon, we're going to be able to see sort of how this season three of Tour Level Gold wrapped up. And so we'll be seeing you, you know, seeing some footage of you in a boat, I think, on that, won't we not?
Yeah. Yeah. The first episode, there'll be some awesome moments of fish I caught. And then I don't think I'll watch the second episode, because that's not a tournament I want to relive. That was a day from hell for me. But no, it's awesome, man. I'm excited for it to air, and you know, everyone that keeps asking me when it's going to air, I find out the same time everybody else does. So I'm just excited for it to, you know, come out and, you know, be able to reminisce the fun season that we had, and you know, and you know, just hope that we can do it again next year. You know, that's hands down the coolest show in fishing, and it was exactly what we wanted when we first started it those years ago. You know, to see it grow to what it is now is just unreal.
Yeah, yeah, it's to the point now where, I mean, yeah. We could crowdfund that thing if we had to. You know, I mean, the fishing industry is sometimes it's kind of tough, and to produce something, and I've had this conversation like on the air with John, it's like to produce something on that level, obviously the production is, you know, it's expensive. It's a business. You have to, you know, you can't just decide you want to make something as good as that, you know, just out of pocket. But it's to the point now where I think the industry wants it bad enough that I think you could just like, you could crowdfund that sucker on GoFundMe and probably budget the next two seasons of it.
Right.
That way, if we had to, we just gotta figure that part out.
I sure hope so. And that's where, like, credit to John, like John does a very good job of, you know, the behind the scenes running it. And, you know, Sam and Logan, you know, the production team, they do, those guys are absolute rock stars. And, you know, the sponsors that we do have, you know, that have helped make it possible. I mean, we're so grateful for them. And, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, like Rocky, one of our main sponsors, like he has come in so clutch to help, you know, make that happen. And people like that, you know, companies like that, they're just fantastic. You know, Aqua Traction, Aftec, you know, those are the ones that got it off the ground. So, you know, have companies like that supporting it, and, you know, hopefully we can find more and continue to support it, and because it's definitely something the industry needs for an extended period of time, for sure.
Dude, I love it, man. All right, cool. I'll talk to you, Max.
All right, brother. You take care. I'll talk to you
later.
All right, bye.